We're picking up where we left off last week in Mark chapter 4. We saw how Jesus began teaching parables to the multitudes, and he would give the interpretation to his disciples in private. Our text begins in verse 35, which took place on the same day as the parables. It says, "On the same day, when evening had come, Jesus said, 'Let us cross over to the other side.'" Remember that Jesus had been teaching from a boat on the Sea of Galilee. That's where they were. The Sea of Galilee, by the way, is not really a sea. It's not an ocean. It's a lake, about 64 square miles, but it was called the Sea of Galilee. And around the lake were various cities and villages. Jesus and the disciples frequently traveled by boat to get from one side to the other. The setting was now evening time, so it was probably dark or getting dark. Verse 36 says, "They left the multitude and took Jesus in the boat as he was." As he was probably refers to the fact that he had already been in the boat teaching. But now they were sailing off. And it says, other little boats were with him also. Apparently, people were following Jesus' boat in their own boat. It was a convoy of boats crossing over. And this journey would turn out to be frightening. Verse 37. "And a great windstorm arose, and the waves beat into the boat so that it was already filling. But he was in the stern, asleep on a pillow. And they awoke him and said to him, 'Teacher, do you not care that we are perishing?'" I don't know about you, but I think bodies of water are both terrific and terrifying. The oceans, rivers, and lakes are some of God's greatest creations. Humans enjoy them for recreation and exploration, and yet they can be severely destructive. Water itself is dangerous, right? Just a little bit of water can threaten your life or your property. Here in Houston, we know that well. And what about what's underneath the water? The things you can't see. Its depth is scary, and its monsters are scary. So when the disciples were on the water and a windstorm arose, you can imagine their fear. The waves were coming into the boat, filling it with water. This was an emergency. The disciples thought they were going to drown and die. That's how serious it was. And in the midst of all the chaos, what was Jesus doing? Jesus was in the back of the boat sleeping on a pillow. Sleeping on a pillow. You've heard of a heavy sleeper before. Well, Jesus was in a deep sleep, at least in this instance. He didn't wake up from the storm. He didn't wake up from the chaos around him. He was awakened by the disciples. In their distress, they said, "Teacher, do you not care that we are perishing?" When Jesus wasn't waking up, the disciples concluded that he didn't care. He didn't care that they were unsafe and might die. But when Jesus arose, he rebuked the wind. He said to the sea, "Peace, be still." And the storm stopped. It went from a great windstorm in verse 37 to a great calm in verse 39. This was certainly a miraculous event. Jesus has the authority to control the weather, to control nature. And he did so with very little effort, it seems. He just spoke to it. That's it. He commanded it, and it obeyed. The sea became more like Jesus, if you think about it. Jesus was at peace, right? Jesus was calm and he made the sea calm. He made the sea more like himself. There's an obvious contrast here between Jesus' demeanor and the disciples' demeanor. The disciples went through the storm with fear and panic. It was a freak out moment, but not for Jesus. He went through the storm at rest, sleeping on a pillow. The waves crashed around him, but Jesus stayed calm. He remained at peace. You might think, well, yeah, but that was easy for Jesus because he's God. He didn't have to worry. And that's true, but Jesus is also a man. And whatever he does as a man is an example for us. Jesus' calmness is a lesson for us to be calm, for us to remain at peace in the storm. Jesus wasn't worried, and he doesn't want you to worry. Think of Matthew 6. What did he say? Do not worry about your life or what you will eat or drink or wear. Do not be anxious for anything. This is why Jesus rebuked the disciples in verse 40. He said to them, "Why are you so fearful? How is it that you have no faith?" Jesus had just rebuked the wind. Now the disciples needed rebuke. He had just calmed the sea. Now the disciples needed to calm down. There's a comparison here between the storm and how the disciples were acting. Both were going crazy, and Jesus had to rebuke both. Now, it's interesting that he said they had no faith, because it's not as though they had zero faith. Okay? In Matthew's account, when they woke Jesus up, they said, "Lord, save us." They had some degree of faith because they were looking to Jesus to save them. They had seen him do miracles before, healing the sick, casting out demons. It's good that they went to Jesus for help. We shouldn't criticize that. We should be the same way. Go to Jesus with your problems. How do you do that? We do that through scripture, prayer, and counsel from godly people. So what did Jesus mean when he said, "How is it that you have no faith?" I think he was referring back to what they said when they woke him. "Do you not care that we are perishing?" They had a small ounce of faith that Jesus could save them, but what they weren't sure of was if he cared about them. Do you not care about us in this moment when we're about to die? That's the issue here. Jesus is saying, "Have you no faith that I care about you?" They mistook Jesus sleeping as him not caring. They mistook his inaction for indifference. And they were wrong. That was a wrong conclusion. Of course, Jesus did care about them. He proved it by calming the storm immediately after they woke him. He honored their request, giving them safety and protection. When they saw his power over the weather, verse 41 says, they feared exceedingly and said to one another, "Who can this be that even the wind and the sea obey him?" That's kind of ironic, isn't it? The disciples had already been afraid. They were afraid of the storm, thinking they would die. So they woke Jesus up, he calmed the storm, and then they were happy ever after. No, they feared exceedingly, not over the storm, but over Jesus. You think storms are scary? The man who controls the storm is scarier. The man who controls the storms is scarier. The disciples were learning the fear of the Lord. And so were the people in the other boats, I presume. We aren't told any more about them, but surely they saw and experienced all of this as well. You should all have a godly fear of Jesus. I don't mean being scared of him as if he's out to get you or wants to hurt you, but a fear that recognizes his power and his might over all things. It's a fear based in love that leads to reverence and awe. It's fearing his wrath should we rebel. The ungodly don't have that fear. They don't care about God's wrath until they're going through it. But Christians care, and Christians fear ahead of time. Your fear of the Lord should work as a deterrent against rebellion. It helps keep you faithful. So the disciples were marveling at Jesus' authority. They said, "Who can this be that even the wind and the sea obey him?" That question isn't answered for us in Mark 4, at least not explicitly. But it can be answered if you know your Bible, if you know your Old Testament. The disciples didn't fully grasp it yet, but this was Yahweh in the flesh, God with us. In the Old Testament, there aren't many examples of human prophets controlling the weather. Elijah prayed for drought and then for rain, but he had to pray to God for them to happen. In the Old Testament, it is Yahweh who controls the weather. We heard Job 38. Yahweh tells the waves to stop and go no further. Psalm 65. Yahweh stills the noise of the sea. Psalm 89, Yahweh rules the raging sea. When its waves rise, he stills them. Psalm 124, Yahweh keeps the waters from sweeping over us. Over and over again, it is Yahweh who controls the weather. So for Jesus to command the wind and the sea directly by the power of his own word meant what? It meant that he was performing an action of Yahweh, because he is Yahweh. Psalm 107 actually foreshadows this event. It has a storyline about traders traveling in their boats. A storm arose. They thought they were going to die, but they called upon Yahweh and he calmed the storm. He got them to their destination safely. In Mark 4, the disciples were in the position of the traders, and Jesus was in the position of Yahweh. The traders called upon Yahweh. The disciples called upon Jesus. Yahweh calmed the storm. Jesus calmed the storm. The story of Jonah, which we should all be familiar with, also foreshadows this event even more directly. Jonah was on a boat when a great storm arose, and what was he doing? Sleeping. He was sleeping on the boat during the storm, just like Jesus. Everyone on the boat was panicking. They thought they were going to die. They woke Jonah up, saying, "Call upon your God, pray for him to save us." And in that case, Jonah had to be thrown from the boat into the sea for the storm to calm. But in Jesus' case, he remained in the boat. The storm ceased at his verbal command. Jesus isn't just a prophet like Jonah. He is greater than a prophet because he is Yahweh. And not only does Yahweh calm storms, but he starts them. Not only does Yahweh calm storms, he starts them. Psalm 107 says, Yahweh commanded and raised up the stormy wind. In Psalm 107, that story about the traitors, the storm that arose was a storm that Yahweh stirred up. And then he calmed it, saving them from it. That's profound. Because if Jesus stands in the place of Yahweh, then not only did he calm the storm, but he stirred it up. He stirred it up. Jesus is the one who brought the storm on the sea. Wasn't it his idea to get into the boat? He said, "Let's cross over to the other side," knowing full well that a storm was coming. The disciples mistook Jesus' sleeping as not caring. But he did care. And he brought them through it, which was his plan all along. He brought the storm so that he could rescue them. He stirred it up so that they would learn to have faith and fear. This is a great story about Jesus' power and his divinity, but one of the main points is that, yes, Jesus cares. Yes, he does care. He does care about the trials and tribulations and storms that you go through. Have you ever found yourself wondering if God really cares? Have you ever felt like the disciples? What are you doing, Jesus? Why won't you act? Why won't you deliver me? Do you not care? Well, take heart that even the disciples struggled with that. Even the disciples struggled with unbelief during certain circumstances. And that doesn't excuse your doubt or your unbelief, but it does mean that you're not alone. And it does mean that God can be merciful to you in your distress, just as he was merciful to the disciples. It means that even those who doubt God can become great in his kingdom, just as the disciples became the leaders of the early church. When you find yourself in a distressing situation, do not mistake God's calmness for indifference. Do not mistake his calmness for indifference. Of course he cares. You think he doesn't care about your problems? He brought the problems to you. He stirs things up so that you will call out to him, so that you will lean on him more and more. He wants you to wake him up. Wake up, God? That sounds strange. That's how the Bible talks. Psalm 7, Psalm 44, Isaiah 51, tell Yahweh to wake up. Psalm 44 says to Yahweh, "Why are you sleeping? Rouse yourself." We don't usually talk that way to God. We know he doesn't literally sleep. But it is appropriate to pray this way when it feels like God is sleeping. When it feels like he is distant. When it feels like he doesn't care and he's not acting on your behalf. He wants you to pray this way. When the storm comes, he wants you to wake him up. He wants you to call out to him so that when he rescues you, when he calms the storm for you, you will have fear and reverence over his power and his love. It wasn't the storm that woke Jesus up. He didn't wake at the sound of the wind and waves. He woke at the sound of his disciples. That is how God wakes up, by hearing the prayers of his people, by hearing the petitions of his disciples. When chaos is all around you, don't think that the chaos alone will spring God into action. That's not how it works. God springs into action by the prayers and petitions of his disciples. That is what he is waiting on. He wants you to call upon his name. So don't delay. And be persistent. Argue with God. We see that also in the scriptures. Don't be afraid to take your raw emotions before the Lord. He can handle it. I mean, Jesus could handle the sins of the world on the cross. He could handle your aggravations and your frustrations and your impatience, whatever it may be. Jesus cares about your trials, whatever they may be. He doesn't just care about them. He stirred them up for a reason. The best thing you can do is stay calm. Don't freak out. Chill out. Of course, some situations require urgency. Some situations require immediate action. But in terms of your spirit, in terms of your emotions and attitude and faith, Jesus wants you to have peace. He wants you to be calm. Go through the storm calmly, as Jesus did. And he would stay calm even when arrested and beaten. He was calm going to his death on the cross. He then went to sleep in the tomb, and he awoke on Easter morning. Look to his example and follow it. When Jesus tells you to have peace, when he tells you to be still, obey him. Be like the wind. Be like the sea and obey him immediately. Stay calm and maintain a godly fear of the Lord, because the only thing we have to fear is God himself.